You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. I'm Scott Lamar. The October 2021 Franklin and Marshall College poll is out today and includes data on what Pennsylvanians think about a variety of important issues, including President Biden's job approval, abortion, an election review, and masks to mitigate the spread of COVID-19 in schools. To break down the results and analyze them is our guest today, Burwood Yost, who is the director of the Center for Opinion Research at Franklin and Marshall College. He appears on today's show to analyze the results. Burwood, always good to talk to you.
Hi, Scott. Nice to talk to you, too.
So, Burwood, let me start with this. When you see the results or saw the results of the poll, what did you think was most significant?
Well, as you said at the start, Scott, there's a lot of different things that we asked about in this poll. And I think, you know, if we're talking politically, from a political perspective, probably the most important finding has to do with the president's job approval ratings. If we're thinking about it from a public health perspective, we'd probably say that the rates of vaccine uptake and the willingness to engage in mitigation measures like masking and vaccine requirements, that would be the sizable story. And actually, if we're thinking about it from a psychological perspective, I would say that the general malaise we see and the sort of dissatisfaction that people feel about our politics and our civic life is also a big finding. So, you know, as I look at this, there's a lot of important things in here. And depending on your perspective, any one of those could be seen as the most important.
You used the word malaise. Didn't President Jimmy Carter use that word and was criticized for it in 1980? But a lot of these results for Joe Biden maybe harken back to the Carter days. When you talk about, okay, malaise, the general attitude, what do you mean? What leads you to believe that the public is not seeing, the public's not very optimistic?
Well, that's exactly it, right? I mean, at the moment, 57, almost 3 in 5 Pennsylvania voters believe the state is headed in the wrong direction. It's off on the wrong track. And almost 70% say that about the United States. And then you look at their general satisfaction with political figures and their performance. You know, there's just a lot of dissatisfaction among the public. And so, you know, that's what I'm referring to there. And of course, that has significant implications for public policy and for politics.
And that was my next question. Why does it matter? We were in a non-election year for a president. I mean, it will be 3 years from now before there would be another presidential election. Why does it matter what President Biden's approval rating is right now?
Well, I think any president is able to do more when they have more support. People, legislators are less likely to speak out against the president. The president has a little more influence and power in the legislative process if he's wildly popular than if not. So, the indicators around job approval, to me, are a signal of strength and ability to influence other policymakers. And at the moment, President Biden's job approval ratings are really quite low, and they've fallen considerably since August. And, you know, that's going to have implications potentially in this election cycle. We have elections next week. And certainly in the midterm election cycle in 2022, because we know in recent history here that the president's job approval is a pretty significant indicator of how things are going to go in the House elections to follow.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some of the specifics. And just to let everyone know that this poll was taken in Pennsylvania and Pennsylvania registered voters, right?
That's correct.
That's
we had 522 registered voters, and the polling was conducted last week.
Mm-hmm. So what was President Biden's job approval rating?
We asked the job approval rating by asking people if the president's doing an excellent, good, only fair, or poor job. And at the moment, 32% of Pennsylvania's registered voters, about one in three, believes the president's doing an excellent or good job. And that is down from 41% in August and 44% in June. So we've seen a general slide in the president's approval ratings and really a strong change since our August survey.
Now, how does that compare with previous presidents?
Well, those approval ratings in Pennsylvania are a good bit lower than where President Obama was at this point in his administration, and they're just a tick above where President Trump was at this point. I think he's about 3 points higher than President Trump was, and a good bit lower than where President Obama was.
Although 32% said President Biden is doing an excellent or good job, one in three, his favorability ratings, where does he stand on that?
So, good question. So we always ask questions about job approval, but we also ask questions about personal favorability. That is, do you have a favorable or unfavorable opinion of the president? And in this instance, he's viewed favorably by about 45% of registered voters and unfavorably by 51%. So he's about minus six in terms of his favorabilities. That's not too bad, and that's certainly not as negative as his job approval ratings, but it's a good bit lower than where he was prior or on election day in 2020. At that point, he was viewed favorably by about 52% of the state's registered voters. So there's even been a slip in his personal popularity, just like his job approval ratings.
One question you ask is what would have to change or what has changed? And you ask whether Biden is doing better or worse. And now I'm going to have you explain that a little bit. But 90% said Biden is doing worse. Worse than what?
Well, after we asked the job approval question, we then asked a question about whether the respondent, the person we interviewed, thought that the president was doing, had changed their mind about how the president was doing. And about 39%, so roughly, you know, one in three voters said that they had changed their minds about the president's job approval in the past few months. And we asked, well, do you think the president's, you know, as you've changed your mind, is the president doing better or worse? And so 90% of those roughly one in three voters who said they changed their mind, most of those folks say they're judging his performance as being worse than it was previously. And importantly, and I think if you look at the reasons, we ask, well, heck, why do you think he's doing worse or better, depending on the response? And those who said he's doing worse, the biggest response, about a third of them said it was what happened in Afghanistan, that Afghanistan withdrawal really changed their opinion of the president. In addition to that, you had a number of people who were concerned about the border crisis and immigration. You had another set of people who said it was the economy, specifically inflation for many of those people. That's a problem. And then, of course, the COVID resurgence. So there were four or five different issues that seem to be driving people away from feeling good about the president's performance. And I think although it really didn't come up a whole lot in one of these top categories, I think if you look at the general reporting around the president's legislative agenda and the failure to get that through, I think that probably amplifies these other problems that people see. So not only did he have these problems that haven't been solved, he also has these legislative issues that he's pushing for that also haven't been passed. And I think if we think back to how he ran for office, I mean, part of his pitch was that he could get things done because of his legislative experience. And I think that's in part hurting him here.
You mentioned earlier that 30% of Pennsylvanians said the state is going in the right direction compared to 57% who said it's on the wrong track across the country. 22%, just 22% say the country is going in the right direction. 69% say the wrong direction. How does that compare with the previous polls? I mean, you go back to 2009. How does that compare? Because that seems awful low, especially with those national numbers.
Oh, it's definitely low. And in fact, I mean, we were in September, October 2018, up through the summer and into October 2019, into the fall. I think there was a majority of people who felt like the state was headed in the right direction. And, you know, since the coronavirus hit, we've just seen a steady decline in the number of people who feel like things are going well. So it's not that these numbers are always depressed. They certainly go up and down in relation to things that are happening. And right now, I think people are pretty dissatisfied with the way things are going, in not just the state, but the nation as a whole.
And if we can read between the lines, which we're here to do, with one of your results, we kind of see who the voters blame, because the number one issue for the majority of people who were polled is government and politicians. Now, we've talked about this before, Burwood, but I don't quite know what that means when they point to government and politicians as the biggest problem facing the state.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, we allow people to tell us whatever they want. The question we ask is just simply, what do you think is the most important problem facing Pennsylvania today? And people can tell us anything they want, and we then group them into categories. And so, you know, the concerns about politics and politicians can range from they just don't get anything done, to they pass things I don't like, to I don't like the gridlock, I don't like the animosity and the anger. I mean, there's a whole host of things. But we know for a long time that government and politicians has been one of those main concerns that people think are exacerbating the problems that we have in the state. I think it's also pretty common if economic concerns are not at the top of mind, that you'll see a number of other issues rise and fall. And at the moment, I mean, if there is any good news, it's that most people don't feel that we have significant economic problems that we're dealing with. So if you want any kind of positive from that, I think the fact that we don't see those economic issues as the primary factor is good. But I think the talk about government and politicians just speaks to that malaise we talked about at the top of the show. People aren't happy with the way we govern ourselves right now.
Well, we have a question from a listener. It says, can two people answer wrong direction but for different reasons? I think that's probably a yes, but maybe you can explain what you found, some of the reasons that people felt that the state and the nation is going in the wrong direction.
Well, that's certainly a good question. I think the answer is yes, absolutely. People can tell us that it's headed in the wrong direction for a variety of reasons. That can mean a lot of different things for a lot of different people. And I think it reflects sort of what they think the problems are that we ask about in that follow-up question about what are the problems facing the state, right? So, it could be concerns about politics and government. It could be concerns about their own personal finances. For some people, it's still concerns about COVID-19. For other people, it might be concerns about education or drugs or crime or, you know, you name it. Every individual has their own perspective on what's right or what's going right or what's going wrong. So there are a lot of potential reasons that people could think the state is off on the wrong track. Right now, I'd have to say most of it has to do with our politics.
Let's talk about the state legislature for just a moment. The state legislature, and this is the question that was on the poll, the state legislature is planning to conduct a forensic investigation of the 2020 election. Do you support or oppose this investigation? 55% strongly or somewhat oppose, 42% strongly or somewhat support. What does that say to you?
Well, I mean, actually, there's a thread that runs through a lot of these questions, Scott, and it has to do with the fact that you have, in many instances, majority support or opposition. We can talk about this in relation to COVID mitigation measures, just like we are talking about it here in terms of this forensic audit. But what you also have, in addition to that kind of majority feelings about these things, is that there are groups, politically speaking, Democrats and liberals and conservatives and Republicans who are diametrically opposed in their responses, right? So we always have to keep that in mind. So when we look at the support for this forensic investigation of the 2020 election, most people say, you know, we don't need it. They oppose it. And I don't think that's a big surprise. But of course, there are these strong partisan differences. 3/4 of Democrats, 2/3 of independents, 90% of liberals, 70% of moderates, they oppose it. But 3/4 of Republicans and conservatives are strongly in favor of it. So, you know, and I think that is true. We also see in some of these COVID measures, right, that we've tested. So while there's majority support, there are also strongly held opinions that are partisan. And that's kind of driving some of the rancor that we see.
A follow-up question, and this was for those who supported a forensic investigation. The state legislature has asked the state to provide a list of all registered voters in the state, their driver's license numbers, partial social security numbers, as well as whether they cast ballots in person or by mail, among other things, as part of the proposed audit. The legislature plans to give this data to a private company for review. Would you continue to support this investigation if it meant your personal information were given to a private company? 60% said yes, they still would support it, which I have to say surprised me a little bit because well, we'll just leave my opinion out of it. What do you think about that?
Well, what we were really trying to do was understand generally whether people support or oppose this audit without any other supporting information. So that first question, we basically just said, hey, the state legislature is planning to conduct a forensic investigation of the 2020 election. Do you support or oppose it? And then if somebody said, well, we support it, then we asked them a couple of follow-up questions to see if there any new information might change that. So the first follow-up we did for just those people who say they support it was, well, there's already been a couple of audits. Does that change your mind? Do you think another one's needed? And almost 80% of people who support it in the first place continue to support it, knowing that there were other audits already conducted. And then that question that you read was the third question in the series, basically just trying to see, does this affect your feelings about it? And so it's 60% of the people who originally support it continue to support it. And, you know, I guess it depends how you look at it, right? Perhaps we'd be surprised that so many people would continue to support it because of the potential sharing of private information. But when you do the math, Scott, that's about 25% of registered voters. So that new information does change things for some people. Maybe it's more than you suspect. I'm interested to hear your opinion about it, but it certainly does have an effect. And it does seem to be the case that when people understand what's expected in terms of the kind of data that would be collected and shared, it does erode support, even among those who initially support the idea.
Let's take a phone call from Aaron in Lititz. Aaron, you're on Smart Talk.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question a little bit about the idea of polling and the conclusions that we draw based on polling numbers. I've always taken a little bit of a sticky spot for me when we say that 75% of anybody believes anything based on polling numbers, when what we know about polling is that 75% of the people who responded to that poll. Could you talk a little bit about methodology and generalization of numbers that come out of polling? Because that definitely changes people's perspectives if they then take that and apply it to policy, as you've been talking about.
Berwood?
That's an excellent question, Aaron, and I appreciate you asking it. And I think we always have to be careful when we're talking about polls and polling that we don't take response to a specific question as necessarily being unchangeable or being an absolute representation of something, because it's important to understand how in any poll, context and wording can make a difference in how people respond. So, you know, we can poll on the issues of the day, but we have to always realize that people at some point, if they receive different information or if the questions are worded differently, there's a potential for those feelings to change. So that's part of it. I mean, I think we always have to keep in mind the way that questions are asked, what we're demanding of respondents when they participate, and, you know, how they understand the questions and the things that we're asking them. So it's important to interpret the questions first and foremost. Then the second part of the question, as I understand it, is just how representative can polling be generally? If you ask people a given question and you repeat that question over time, how likely is it that you're really representing the views of the broader public? And, you know, pollsters like me and my colleagues in the field spend a lot of time trying to make sure that our polls are representative. So, for instance, in this particular poll, we drew a random sample of registered voters in the state. Everyone that we sampled, we mailed an invitation to participate in our study. So they got a postcard telling them that they were selected to participate. We asked them if they wanted to, they could complete the survey online, or they could call us and complete the survey, or we would call them to do an interview at some point as well. So we followed up with phone calls and in some instances, emails. So we make a real effort to make sure that everybody has an opportunity, everybody in our sample has an opportunity to participate. And then we make sure that the data at the end kind of matches things that we know about in the state. So for instance, the vaccination rate question, that looks like the numbers that are reported for CDC for adult vaccinations, right? So we compare and try to make sure that the data that we collect matches what we know to be true. And then we have some confidence that it's representative. I think, you know, in the end, we have to realize that because we're using a sample, there's always going to be variability. So 70% doesn't necessarily mean 70%. It means around 70%. So we just have to keep that in mind. These are approximations based on the way that we ask the questions. But they do give us some direction. And when you see the patterns and the trends that we see, and they match with things that are happening in the world, I think we can have some confidence that they at least tell us a few things about how people are feeling about politics and about their lives at any given point.
Barwood, and I know this is a question you've been asked more in the last 4 years, but Christine has kind of a follow-up to that. And you make this clear in the printed version of the poll, but a lot of people want to know where you're coming from, providing some context, wanted to know the demographics of the respondents, age range, sex, party affiliation, landline versus cell phone. How's it broken down?
Well, that's a lot of categories,
Scott. Oh, I know,
Scott.
I know.
But essentially, if you would go in and look at the demographics, and I think, you know, this raises an important point, and that is when you're looking at the results of a poll, you want to make sure that whoever produced the poll is sharing with you exactly how that poll was done. So when we release our results, we release the entire questionnaire and the distribution of responses. So you can go in and you can look at the number of young people versus old people, the number of Republicans versus Democrats, the number of people from Philly in the Southeast versus Pittsburgh in the Southwest. That's all reported in our polling release. And if you do that, you can tell that it matches the numbers that we know about for the from the Department of State. So the Department of State gives us counts of registered Democrats and Republicans. It tells us where they live. And if you look at the proportions that we have in our samples on those characteristics that we know about, they match up. And we want to make sure that that's the case. And in fact, they do. So it's good to scrutinize a poll for its wording, for its sequencing, for its sampling, and for how the characteristics of the sample, which, I mean, we list pretty much everything you can imagine in the back, veteran status, religion, gender, race. We collect all that kind of data, and you can see how that's distributed if you look at our poll releases. And for those things that we have data for, and you can make a comparison, you'll see that the data from the survey matches pretty well the data from those known sources.
Why registered voters, especially in a non-election year?
Well, part of it's about resources and costs, right? In this day and age, it is increasingly difficult to draw samples of from the general public. It's more expensive. And so having a list of registered voters, we know there's a voter registration list, and we can sample from that list. So it gives us a defined population, and it costs us a little less to reach those people than it would a general population survey. We do general population surveys as well, but given given the topics that we typically ask about, Scott, which is normally focused on presidential electoral performance, policy issues, things like that, we think that the registered voter sample is the right way to go because we're most interested most of the time in policy questions.
Mm-hmm. We have a question now about what we were discussing earlier in the program about President Biden's support. Dave wants to know, is President Biden losing support amongst Pennsylvania Democrats, or are losses in support mostly among Republicans and independents? And what do these results say about the Pennsylvania race for governor?
That's a multi-part question.
Hey, our audience is very curious, Burwood.
Yes, no, your listeners are terrific, and they're very smart. They ask very, very good questions. I think the most important part of the president's declining job numbers really has to do with the fact that President Biden's support among Democrats is definitely slipping, Democrats and liberals. So if we look at his job approval ratings, say among Democrats, they went from 78% to 62%. And even among independents, they went from 38 to 23% positive approval. And they went from about 80% to a little under 70% among liberals. So this isn't really about him losing support from Republicans and conservatives, because he really never had that. This is about his base starting to be a bit more dissatisfied with his performance. And I think, you know, that matches what we've seen in a lot of the news coverage, right, Scott, where we see this infighting between liberals and moderates within the party. And I think that's, we're seeing that play out. And in fact, if you compare the president's job approval rating to Governor Wolf's job approval rating, Governor Wolf does better among liberals and Democrats than President Biden does at the current moment. So, you know, I think that's what's harmful or hurtful for the president from a political standpoint, is that the base is slipping. And so that leads us directly to that next question about the 2022 Senate and gubernatorial races, which, you know, if I'm a Democrat and I see what's in this poll, and the fact that we know that in a state like Pennsylvania, presidential approval rating is going to have something to do with who turns out to vote. I think that at the moment, if we were a year in the future, Scott, I think Democrats would be in a really bad shape at this point in time. I think it would be really a toss-up whether or not they could win those races. Now, there's still a year to go, so I think there's plenty of time for those conditions to change. And in fact, it's not unusual for them to change. But at this point, I think the president's approval ratings make it more difficult for Democratic candidates to win up and down the ballot, but particularly in the race for governor and Senate.
I want to move on to another issue, Burwood, abortion. The question was, do you think that abortion should be legal under any circumstances, legal under circumstances, or illegal in all circumstances? 36% said that it should be legal under any circumstances, 51% under circumstances, and 11% said illegal in all circumstances. And that is the biggest percentage since 2009, or at least as far back as you you went back to 2009 with this. So what do those results say to you?
Well, you know, there's actually been a surprising amount of stability in those responses. I mean, for most of the time, a majority of registered voters in the state think that abortion should be legal under certain circumstances, and that, you know, there's a small proportion who say it should always be illegal, and there's, you know, a slightly larger proportion who say it should be legal under any circumstances. But for the most part, Scott, these feelings on this simple question about do you basically support or oppose legal abortion have been pretty stable over time. There hasn't been a lot of movement there. You know, it may bounce up a little bit depending on what's in the news, but for the most part, we always see the largest chunk of people are the people in the middle. And, you know, we track that because it's an important political indicator. We track something similar related to gun control issues as well. But this time, what we did, in addition to asking about the general attitudes about abortion, we also then asked a question about whether or not the law that was recently passed in Texas related to abortion should be brought to Pennsylvania. And people can read the question the way that we phrased it themselves. But basically, we said, you know, Texas passed this law, gave a couple of its provisions and said, would you support or oppose passing this kind of law in Pennsylvania? And interestingly, almost everyone opposes that. I think support for that particular question was 14%. So roughly one in seven people said they would like to see that kind of law brought to Pennsylvania. The vast majority of citizens said they are opposed to bringing that to Pennsylvania. And I think, you know, that's even among Republicans and conservatives who are normally more likely to support abortion restrictions, only 20-some percent of those groups would even support bringing that here.
Yeah, it was, if I look at the results, 69% strongly oppose, 12% somewhat oppose. So you're looking at 81% of those who are asked saying that they oppose a Texas-like abortion law here in Pennsylvania. Another question, and something that has been in the news for the past month or so, requiring teachers and students to wear masks. 62% strongly or somewhat support, 35% oppose. What does that say to you?
Well, you know, I think these were some of the most interesting items, as I touched upon at the top, particularly from a public health standpoint. You know, we hear a lot about opposition to coronavirus vaccines, and we also have seen a lot of news coverage about the fights that are happening at local school boards around COVID and mask mandates. So it probably makes us think that most people oppose these things. But I remind people who I know who serve on school boards, it's often the case that people who show up at those meetings aren't necessarily representative of the broader public. And I think that's what we see here with the mask mandate things. I mean, about 2 in 3 people favor having masks in public schools, and other, you know, mitigation measures they also tend to support. But I think I mentioned this at the top, Scott, the real issue here is the way that it divides people politically. You know, 41% of Republicans, about 44% of conservatives strongly oppose those mandates in schools, while most Democrats and liberals, somewhere around 70% of Democrats and 85% of liberals or so, strongly favor them. And so that's what we get reported. The conflict and the strong differences in support or opposition among those partisan groups. But in reality, there is, generally speaking, support for these measures, as there is, as we see, Scott, 90% of adults have had at least one vaccination in the state. Despite the rhetoric, there is support for doing some of these things.
Yeah, that was the result that caught my eye, Burwood, that 91% of the people that were polled said that they had been vaccinated. And, you know, that's higher than, you know, the state average. And the state is 90% for one shot. It's just
right.
Over 70% vaccinated.
That's what we asked about, Scott, whether they had one shot
okay.
or not. So
okay.
those numbers in the poll match pretty closely what the state and the CDC reporting in terms of vaccine uptake.
You also ask about businesses and some of their mitigation efforts. What did you find?
Well, it's interesting. A smaller proportion than the mask mandate for public schools, a smaller proportion support employers requiring COVID vaccines of their employees. About 56% favor that. And a bare majority, 51%, support requiring customers to provide proof of vaccination to get services. So those two, while favored by a majority, are not as strongly supported as the mask mandates in schools.
Mm. Another topic, marijuana legal for recreational purposes. This is, and you've said it yourself, that this is an issue which has turned around a lot in the public's eye over the last few years. But what did your results show here?
So, The latest poll basically shows consistent attitudes on this issue. Right now, 60% of the folks that we talked to said that they favor the use of recreational, making that legal. And that's about where it's been since we started polling on this around June 2017. we went over, that was the time period when we went over majority support for legalized marijuana. And it's been pretty consistent. I mean, it may creep up a little, a few points here and there, but basically most registered voters believe that marijuana should be legalized.
Is it a priority? And
it really is a big change. In 2006, I think, was the first time we asked that question. Only 22% said at that time that it should be made legal. So that's been one of those, you know, over the course of 15 years, we've seen huge changes in attitudes.
Do we know whether it is a priority issue for voters, though?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a fair question, and I don't think it's a priority, right? When we ask the most important problem, people, there isn't a huge groundswell saying, well, you know, we got to make marijuana legal. I think it's pretty far down the list. So you're right. It's not a priority, I think, for most people, but most people are willing to let it happen.
We have an email here from Michael in Harrisburg. Says, your guest has talked about approval numbers, but has provided no reasons why anyone, including Trump, thinks he really won the 2020 presidential election. When you find out that Joe Biden is the legitimate president, will you come back on Smart Talk and tell the public that your suppositions were wrong? Well, we have done that. I mean, after the election, we analyzed the election. But for Michael's question, why did Joe Biden win Pennsylvania?
Why did he win Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
That's the question.
Yeah,
well, when we think about it, and actually, there's a lot to unpack with Michael's question. But when we think about what happened in 2020 election, essentially, you saw the suburban parts of Pennsylvania where Republicans have historically been strong swing towards President Biden. I think he did really well in those suburban counties, did really well in urban areas, and that carried him to victory. There's no question that President Trump's tenure generated a lot of antipathy among certain subgroups. I would say that if we're looking for a group or groups that were really important in the Biden coalition, it was certainly people of color, and it was certainly women, particularly suburban women, who really helped drive his success. And part of what we're perhaps seeing in his slipping poll numbers has to do with some of those voters turning away from him right now. But I just want to make sure that Michael understands we weren't advocating for a forensic audit. We were simply reporting that most people don't want to see it happen. And in fact, when they get more information, fewer people want to see it happen. So I think there's a general sense among Pennsylvanians that that is past, and that's something that we need to revisit.
And one other thing, if we could take a step back to when we were talking about presidential politics, we mentioned that President Biden was viewed favorably by 45%, unfavorably by 51%. But you asked the question about former President Trump. He's viewed favorably by 39% of registered voters and unfavorably by 57%. So amongst registered voters, Biden still has a higher favorable rating than Trump does.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And so, I think there was a little slippage there in President Trump's numbers. He's certainly out of sight for the most part. He was never a personally popular candidate in Pennsylvania. His favorable numbers were always sizably underwater. I mean, typically, the reason we ask that question is it's normally the case that candidates that have positive favorability ratings tend to win. And if you have a negative favorability ratings, you don't. That's why it's an important indicator. That's why we track that number. I would also add, Scott, we asked a question this time, which we asked previously, about whether or not people felt that the events that took place at the Capitol on January 6th were good or bad? Would that be a good thing or a bad thing if it happened after every election? And nearly 90% of people in both polls said it would be bad for democracy if those kinds of events would take place after every election. So I don't think people want to relive this stuff in that way over and over.
You said both polls. You mean both parties?
No, both polls. The October poll that completed, we asked that question, and the August poll when we asked it as well. So at both points in time, the numbers are strongly tilted towards feeling that those events were a bad thing for democracy.
We have about 2 minutes left, Burwood. You did ask about the U.S. Senate race is in Pennsylvania next year. One name sticks out, John Fetterman, Lieutenant Governor on the Democratic side running. What stuck out to me on the Republican side was 78% said they don't know. So what did you take away from those Senate polls?
Yeah, there's not much to take away from those polls at the moment. On the Democratic side, Scott, I think we're talking about the fact that, and in fact, on both sides, you're really talking about name recognition at this point. And we wanted to get an early read to see if anyone had a real advantage. And of course, given Lieutenant Governor Fetterman's rather higher profile than anyone, you know, he's leading among Democrats for the Senate race. But I mean, the real story here is that on both sides, there are many, many people who haven't even started paying attention, and those races are both wide open. Mm.
Again, with about a minute left to go, what's the big takeaway, Burwood, from this poll in October 2021?
Well, I think we really are talking about the general dissatisfaction that people are feeling about the president, his slipping job numbers, because that has sizable political implications, both for right now and for the midterms. And so I think if you're a Democrat and a liberal, you're hoping that he's able to pass some legislation and turn some of these things around to improve his standing for the midterms.
It seems as though, I mean, basically what you're describing is the president is weak right now. There's no reason for Republicans to compromise, is there?
Not at the moment.
Burwood Yost is the director of the Center for Opinion Research at Franklin and Marshall College. The FNM October 21, 2021 poll is out today. Burwood, always good talking with you. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Hey, my pleasure, Scott. Thank you.
I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.